With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today, we are not doing a full recap of the Kansas victory over Michigan State in the Champions Classic, although I will say that that was an absolutely phenomenal game. I loved what I saw there. No, instead, we are getting ourselves ready for the weekend that I have had circled on my calendar for a really, really long time, ever since this game got canceled, not once, but twice last year for the Kansas Jayhawks. I realize things have been pretty bad for the Kansas football program at this point, but... You know, this is that one thing that we always kind of hold some sort of hope onto. And to help me preview this game, Gerald Goodridge of the Longhorn Republic coming back to us. Gerald, how are you doing today?
You know, I'm doing okay. I think it's been a weird couple of weeks for Texas football fans.
Just a couple.
I'm thinking specifically of the monkey business and then a player leaking a video of a coach cussing him out on the bus, which actually turned out to be a net positive, which we can get into whenever you want to. But I'm doing okay, all things considered. My wife's good. My three kids are good. So all the things that matter in life are good.
Yeah. I mean, you actually led us right into it. So I was going to ask about the whole state of the program, given the fact that they've lost four straight. Some really bad comebacks that have happened against them, and then all the off the field stuff. So let's just start with the off the field stuff. Like, absolutely that crazy, all the stuff that's come out. Which one of those two things is the bigger deal or the weirder story to you?
I mean, very easily it's the special teams / tight end coach's wife, significant other, a child getting bit at their house by her emotional support monkey.
Skipped over the juiciest details, but that's all right. I think everyone's heard them by now if you follow college football at all.
Have. And there's a longer conversation to be had about like whether or not that is like actually pertinent to the story, but like, yeah, she is a former adult dancer. I think she retired from that life when she and Jeff Banks got together. But like that was also like when he was at A&M. So two coaches ago, which is, you know, it's a longer conversation than we have.
Well, I mean, that's why I think it made as big of a story as it did, because of that part. Like, everybody wanted to talk about that part. And there's obviously a whole bunch of other stuff that really isn't pertinent to any of this, but it's just not really good publicity to have with the program. Especially since I was under the impression that, you know, he was being considered for some potential like step up in jobs, but that kind of came out at just the wrong time for that kind of stuff to happen. So, but you know, you also talked about the video that came out of the coach that was yelling at the players. I mean, what were your thoughts on that? Cause I didn't even really think it was that big of a deal. Yeah. I mean, you know, the language that got used in some case, that's not really that bad, especially probably compared to what they're hearing most of the time in the locker room, either between each other or, you know, coaches talking or things like that. Like, yeah. I played middle school football, and there was people talking like that all the time in middle school football. So, like, I can just imagine how much worse it gets as you go up every level. So, I don't know that that was necessarily that bad. Like, what was the biggest takeaway you had from that entire interaction?
Yeah, and I think there's two conversations that need to be had around it. I think the biggest thing is, like, there are people that struggle to separate the language from the message, and, like, if that's your takeaway, that's fine, but I disagree with it, especially given the context. But, like, and this happened, honestly, the rumblings of this started 2 weeks ago when the story broke about Steve Sarkisian and senior wide receiver Joshua Moore kind of having it out on the field. And this is something that I think is intentional by the coaching staff. If you go back and you watch the video, which, one, I think it's not funny, but it's funny that this is something that happened. But, like, the message is really clear from the coaching staff. Either you buy into the culture we're trying to build, or there's the door. And that was the message that Bo Davis is preaching. And Bo Davis is a guy who's got skins on the wall, both at Texas, Alabama, and in the NFL. And so he knows what he's talking about. And that, to me, is the bigger, and what a lot of Texas fans are glomming onto and really giving their attention to, is, like, we've known there's been a culture issue at Texas for a long time. There's been a culture issue at Texas since Mack Brown was there. And so finally seeing somebody calling out that culture, the culture issues of not hating to lose, right? Like, that was the issue that he was calling out. Guys were cutting up and joking after getting absolutely embarrassed by Iowa State. And, like, players need to hate to lose more than they like winning and like what the University of Texas can offer them. There's a reason why my wife and I don't play board games on date nights anymore, because I hate to freaking lose. I've ruined a number of date nights. I ruined two date nights, and I was like, all right, we're never playing board games again, because yeah. I hate to lose. And I'm not even a top tier athlete. I'm just a dude, right? And so, like, that to me is the biggest thing, what a lot of Texas fans are coming out with. And it actually, you saw it, we're recording on Wednesday, Wednesday night, Texas players started changing their Twitter profile pictures to Bo Davis's headshot. And so there seems to, like, it's an open secret now at this point, and it seems to be hitting the right notes. Guys are buying in. The best players on offense, Xavier Worthy, probably the biggest and best player they've got outside of Bijan Robinson on offense, was one of the first players that did it. And so you're seeing team leaders buying into the message of, we're trying to do something here, and if you are not, then you're not welcome. And I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a little weird to see it at this point in the season, because this, I mean, you know, the huge comebacks that happened in the last weeks prior to that, like, I would have thought that we would have gotten that sort of reaction previously. And so I don't know. And obviously neither of us really have a lot of, you know, firsthand experience or really know what's going on in that locker room there. But it just seems weird to me that, you know, that game against Iowa State was the one that caused the problems when they had, you know, I mean, obviously the loss to Oklahoma was the first warning sign, you know, just with the way that comeback happens. But that's a weird game. It happens all the time, honestly, with back and forth. And you know, you never really know what you're going to get when you go into the Red River rivalry. And so, yeah. But then, you know, the huge comeback by Oklahoma State, you know, in the week after that, and then the loss to Baylor, like, those, I would have thought that there would have been some big blow up and we would have heard something more about this at that point. It was just a little weird to me that it took that game against Iowa State for a lot of this kind of stuff to happen. And I don't know if it was one or two individual players that you know, just didn't like the way that particular game happened and you know, end up getting under the coaches. Like, I don't really know what it is. It's just the timing of it's weird. Of course, it's super unfortunate for Kansas fans, because you would have hoped that they either would have had their big, you know, come to Jesus moment a few weeks ago and things could settle down, you know, or they would have waited until, you know, after they had a really poor showing against KU, and then all of this stuff would have blown up. Like, what I'm worried about now with this particular game is that Texas is going to be fired up. Like, there's going to be a lot of guys that are fired up, and this is a game where they know they can get back to winning. You know, and so, like, the hope was, I think, that they either would have settled down or they would have been so down in the dumps, you know, that Kansas would have at least had a shot of not getting them at their best. I have a hard time thinking that that's not going to be the case at this point. But before we get into the specifics of this particular game, I do want to ask, though, you know, we talked about kind of those comebacks and the four-game losing streak that Texas is on at this point. Like, what has been the biggest issue that Texas has had in the last few weeks that have really caused them to, for whatever reason, just collapse?
I think the OU one is a little, you mentioned it, it's different, right? There are a lot of things that could happen in Dallas. That's a game that's built on momentum. You had a freshman make a boneheaded play, and that kind of led to a lot of it. But I think when you look at the three that followed it, well, you know, Oklahoma State, Baylor, and then Iowa State, it was a lack of the offense being able to respond to what the opponents were doing. And so you saw Texas in all four of those games build a big lead, and then the defense made an adjustment and the offense didn't really have the horses in the barn, specifically on the offensive line, to make that shift and make that adjustment. And so you saw, like, it was super embarrassing against Oklahoma State. I think the offense had 1 yard in the fourth quarter, which is just unheard of. And so when the defense is rewarding you with stops, it happened against Baylor Texas got Baylor off the field defensively 3 consecutive drives, and the offense just gave the ball right back. And so there's a lack of rewarding your defense for making plays, and it's the Big 12, it's college football, it's football in 2021. Offenses are going to score, and so if your defense stops them from scoring, you've got to put up some semblance of a response in order to build up and build momentum. Because against Oklahoma State, again, I can see it happening. Texas is going for the knockout blow, and the offense, they throw an interception, basically a pick six, almost pick six, ends the half. And so that, instead of Oklahoma State coming out of the locker room, kind of having to go against what they want to do on offense, they're just able to run their offense, and they crockpot Texas in the second half. Same thing happened against Baylor. Couldn't land the knockout punch. Baylor stays in their offense. They crockpot you in the second half. Iowa State was a whole completely different thing. The offense looked out of sorts. The offensive line got beat by 3/4-man pressure. And I think it all really comes down to the offensive line not being able to give the quarterbacks any semblance of time to make reads and make a throw.
Yeah, but I mean, that I think explains the offensive side of it. That, like, the offense just can't keep it going for whatever reason. But it doesn't, I think, explain to me the defense, because the defense has gone from fairly strong showings in the first half of each of the last three games to just completely, like, doing, like, basically, you know, laying people by in the second half. Like, what is going on there that causes them to have such problems in the second half when it seems like they're actually playing really well in the first half? Is it like a lack of adjustments from the coaching staff? Is there something else going on there? Is it some sort of conditioning? Like, what is it that leads to the second half problems for the defense?
Yeah, so I mentioned the complimentary football in that first bit where, like, if your offense is going 3 and out on every drive, then you're just going to get worn down. And that's actually really what I think happened against Oklahoma State and Baylor. Iowa State, I don't know what the heck happened there. They just kind of laid down and took it. But I think the other thing that we have to really talk about, and this is, I'm not like a fire a coach in year one. I think that's asinine, but part of the issue is also schematic. And there was a quote that came out, and I wish I had it in front of me, but after the Baylor game, one of the reporters asked their running backs about Texas's defensive alignment, because Pete Kwiatkowski is going to run 2 high safeties till the cows come home, until however you believe the world is going to end, that is the point where Pete Kwiatkowski will be running 2 high safeties. And so they asked the Baylor running backs about it, and basically said, you know, Texas is playing too high and their linebackers are over pursuing, so the cutbacks are going to be there and we're going to run it down your throat. And that, to me, is a pretty damning quote. That is a quote that's like, that's inexcusable, right? If as a defensive coach, if you don't have the players to play the system that you want, then you've got to be willing to adjust. But coming out 4 weeks in a row and hoping something different is going to happen and not making any sort of adjustment, not sliding a safety down, not doing anything to help out your linebackers, not doing anything to help out your linemen, that's inexcusable. And so there's been some conversation this week that Texas is bringing on a former defensive coordinator. He's not like nobody that I think would rattle cages or anything, but kind of to do some self-scouting and to see where Texas can make some adjustments. So that's a positive sign that Texas is hopefully going to look at doing something different and trying something different against Kansas, because again, if you don't have the horses to run your system, then you've got to adjust and tweak and really allow for those players to at least be in a position to be successful.
Yeah. I mean, that quote though, I mean, I don't know. The way that I read that one when I saw it wasn't that, you know, they were doing the exact same thing, you know, each game from game to game. Like, it didn't seem like that was the issue. It seemed more of an issue that, you know, Baylor went in and made adjustments at halftime and was able to then find success because Texas didn't do anything different in the second half defensively. And I think that that was something that we saw, you know, several times. Like we saw that in the TCU game, right? Where TCU was having a lot of problems in the first half. And then when they came out in the second half, the defensive looks from Texas were exactly the same. And so TCU was able to find the holes and Texas didn't adjust. Like how much worry is there among the Texas fan base that this defensive staff just doesn't really know how to, you know, adjust on the fly in the middle of a game? And I mean, cause that could be a huge problem if, you know, they're not able to react to what opposing teams are doing and, you know, can't find any way to do something differently.
Yeah. And I think that's we're singing the same song in different verses.
Okay. Like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Pete Kwiatkowski is just not adjusting from week to week or in game. Like that's, and that is not Texas fans are not shying away from that fact. There's a vocal minority that wants to make a change. And I think that's asinine because then that is now your fourth defensive coordinator in 4 years. And that is not a way to build any sort of continuity. But I do think especially again with bringing in outside eyes on the defense, I think Sark and Kwiatkowski have had to come to Jesus about one adjusting the system week to week and one being able to make in-game adjustments and really shift to what the offense is giving you.
Yeah, so I mean, let's take a look at this defense itself. You know what I mean, like where are the big playmakers? Like what is the strength of this defense?
I think the strength of this defense was supposed to be the defensive line. The defensive line and the linebackers. You've got a guy like Keandre Coburn, who's probably going to hear his name called late in the NFL draft. You've got a guy, DeMarvian Overshown, at linebacker, who heading into the year was people were touting him as a first two rounds pick. He's got put some bad tape out there just with inconsistency. This is only really his second year playing linebacker, so there's a little bit of growth. He spun his way down from safety to linebacker and has really been pretty impressive for somebody who's again they played 11 or 10 games last year and we're in week 10, so 20 games at linebacker. He's been pretty solid overall, and those are kind of the two big stars. You'll probably hear the name Alfred Collins, who's another one of the big defensive linemen. Byron Murphy is a true freshman that came in, and they say he's a true freshman, but I really want to see his birth certificate because he shows up and he looks like he's got two ex-wives and a mortgage. Like he's just one of those kids that's like, how are you? Nobody when I went to high school looked like you. He's another guy that I think is gonna be a future star on the defensive front. And so those are names, especially if Texas is able to do what they should do against the Kansas ground attack, those will be names that you'll probably hear early and often.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, you talked about how those were supposed to be the names. It sounds like maybe they're not necessarily performing the way it is. So like who would you say to this point this year have been the standout guys, like the guys that really surprised you and have been playing a lot better than maybe you expected coming into the year, specifically on defense? Yeah.
On defense, I couldn't name. I've been very frustrated the defense. And so I think again, like it was supposed to be the strength. And so going into the year, I was very excited about seeing Keandre Coburn play, and he's been good. It's hard to like have super high expectations on a nose and what's basically a three-man front, right? Because they don't show up on the stat sheet a lot. And even in the games where the run defense struggled, part of the reason that the cutback lanes were there is because there were games where Keandre Coburn basically picked up a center and moved him 3 yards, but the linebackers weren't there to fill the gap behind him. And so like there's like your nose is doing what they're supposed to do, and then you know, and this is not a shot at the guy. Luke Brockermeyer is a former walk-on who's starting at this point, you can see the talent gap and the talent deficiency. And there were guys that Texas recruited to play that spot, who ended up having to like medically retire or transferred out. And so there's that gap there as well. But I think if the Texas defense looks like what it should, then we'll see again, a guy like Keandre Coburn and Alfred Collins, that are living up and playing up to the potential that we saw, 9-10 weeks ago.
So what is the best way to attack this defense then? Like, has there been a consistent problem for this defense, a hole that opponents have really started to exploit? Or is it kind of just been random things failing at different times and there's not really anything you can pin down?
Cutbacks and speed option are the two things that I'll tell you. There has been running backs have been able to really cut against the grain in Texas. There's an advantage to a really aggressive defense, especially when you're playing on the ground. But if you lose contain on the back end, there's not enough geometry in the world that can help you maintain that angle. And so that is something. And again, the one that broke the dam against Iowa State was both of them, where they ran a speed option to the field side and then Breece Hall cut completely across back across the field and just nobody on the field was able to catch him. And so those are the two things that I think if teams do not run speed option against Texas, then you're just not doing your job as an offensive staff. Like, I don't know if that's not sprinkled into your playbook at some point, if that's not installed for Texas week, then you're not doing your job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think obviously a lot of it depends on what kind of personnel you have, but there's definitely packages you can add that will take advantage of those sorts of things, even if it's not specifically that, you know, certain schematic, but there are definitely ways to incorporate those kind of offensive concepts. I do think that Kansas has the ability to take advantage of that in some fashion. The question is always going to be how consistent, you know, and I mean, they do have to be able to sprinkle in some other things so that Texas can't just sell out to try to, you know, cover over those deficiencies. We'll actually get to that in the matchups, because I do think that there's some interesting matchups here to talk about at this point. But before we do that, just a couple quick things. You know, we did talk about the last few weeks, which unfortunately for Texas fans and then for anybody who has actually been following Texas and betting on Texas to be one of the better teams in the Big 12 this year, has really caused a lot of problems for them, especially over on the sponsor that we have here on the podcast. That is Symbol. Symbol is the stock market for sports the stock market for sports that allows you to profit off your sports knowledge. On Symbol, you can trade sports teams like stocks, and every time your teams win, you earn cash. Use that sports knowledge on Symbol to buy low, sell high, and earn cash payouts when your teams win. Join the 8,000-plus early adopters who have started to invest in their favorite teams, including Big 12 teams like Texas and Kansas, and unfortunately some other teams that have had some issues with their value dropping in the last few weeks. But if you go to Symbol.com, create a free account, and when you deposit, make sure you use promo code CHALK12. You can get a money-back guarantee. What that means is, you get started here on Symbol. You can deposit up to $500 using that promo code. And if any time in the next 90 days or in the next 90 days, your portfolio there has lost value, you can actually ask to get a full refund on that initial deposit amount. So it's a good way to, you know, get in there, give it a try, have fun investing, find some teams you think are going to skyrocket in value. And if it doesn't work out, then you have an opportunity to go ahead and get your money pulled back out. So I highly recommend you do it. I'm having a lot of fun over there with the teams that I have, even though I haven't gotten the return that I was hoping for when I got them. You know, I think that has more to do with my investment strategy than anything else. But, you know, head on over there, symbol.com, use promo code CHALK12, get a $500 money back guarantee, and start investing in your favorite teams today. All right. So I do want to jump over to the offense. I'm super curious about what's going on with this offense, because again, it seems to be hot and cold at various times. But before we do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
If you love the Big 12, then we have the show for you. The 10-12, the podcast that covers all 10 teams in the Big 12 Conference. Forget the SEC, forget the Big 10, and forget national podcasts that only talk about Oklahoma and Texas. We talk about the Sooners and the Longhorns. We also talk about the Cyclones, the Cowboys, the Wildcats, the Mountaineers, the Jayhawks, the Red Raiders, the Horned Frogs, and the Bears. We love the whole Big 12, and we are available everywhere that podcasts are found. So go and find the 10-12 podcast and subscribe today.
Basketball season is finally here, Big 12 fans. And for your home for men's and women's basketball, come to Midwest Madness. We are doing game coverages, going over game analysis, different rankings of teams, and consistently looking at the best matchups in the conference. You're not going to want to miss out on all the amazing basketball coverage we have. So go check out Midwest Madness, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we're back. All right. So I'm here with Gerald Goodridge of the Longhorn Republic. We are previewing the Kansas and Texas game. We've already talked about the defense, because I think that was the bigger story coming into this week so far. But I am curious about the offense, because it seems to me like the only consistent thing on this offense would be Bijan Robinson. But for whatever reason, he seems to be having trouble in the second half. And I don't know if that's because they're leaning on him so heavily that teams are either figuring it out or he's wearing down at the end of games or what. But it seems like for whatever reason, Texas is going away from him in the second half. Is that because other things are supposed to be opening up or because teams have been selling out to stop Bijan?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think Texas, again, if you listen to my podcast, you've ever heard me talk about Texas. This is the Texas offensive line is just not. Bijan deserves way better than what the Texas offensive line is giving him. And we saw it against Iowa State. Iowa State was not going, and really Baylor as well, they were not going to let Bijan Robinson beat them. They were just not. And so they forced Texas to go away from it. And so they put the ball in Casey Thompson's arms, and Casey Thompson, you know, he came into the year and we knew what he was and we knew what he wasn't. And he didn't really have, he's not the gunslinger. He's not the guy who's going to throw the ball, you know, 80 yards off his knees. And he got hurt against Oklahoma State. So whatever zip he did have on the ball was significantly diminished. And so he was not able to really punish defenses for stacking the box against Bijan. And so that's been the thing. And, you know, again, the halftime adjustments, Texas's offensive line in God bless him, Herb Hand just did not do a good job of developing these guys to where they should be. They were not able to deal with what the defense gave them in the second half. And so there is a likelihood that with a better offensive line, I think you see better play from Bijan in the second half. And so I don't necessarily, he ended up getting injured against Iowa State late in the game. So I wonder if Texas puts him on a pitch count this week. No offense to Kansas football, but like if you can get Bijan some amount of rest in this game, then you probably should. And so that to me, that's been the big issue, is that the defenses make adjustments. The offensive line just isn't good enough to adjust to it. And the quarterbacks aren't punishing teams for sliding a safety into the box or keeping, you know, seven people, eight people home, to really stop the run.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big story for Texas offense, because last year, Sam Ellinger didn't really have any consistent receivers that he could rely on to be able to really get things moving. And it seems like they're in a similar sort of situation, although I think I'm willing to put a little bit more of the blame on the actual quarterback, just because, you know, it has been somewhat of a revolving door for the quarterback position. You know, Hudson Card started the year out, obviously, and then Casey Thompson took over a few games in. And now this last game, you know, it looked like Thompson got benched for Hudson Card again. Is that a position that's still up for grabs at this point? Or was that more of a something happened in the Iowa State game that they put Card in, but they're going back to Thompson?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think Sark said it in his Monday press conference that they were kind of evaluating the quarterback position. They pulled Casey Thompson because he didn't look good. And I think he didn't look good because his thumb/wrist is injured. He just didn't have the pop on the ball that he needed to really fit into the spaces that he wanted to. And so we also know what Hudson Card is and Hudson Card isn't. Hudson Card was an all-world quarterback that relied on his athleticism to win games. And that's just not going to get it done when your offensive line, when you're playing off your back foot and having to reset the pocket, that is the biggest exploitable thing to me, is if Hudson Card is in there and you get him off schedule and out of the pocket, he's going to squeeze the ball and not throw it, or he's not going to tuck it and run. He's going to try and look for an open man. And then he's going to make a dumb throw or throw it away and end up with an intentional ground. Like, that's probably the biggest exploitable thing. When you play against Texas. And so I'm curious to see, what that quarterback room looks like and shakes out. Again, I think it's going to be Hudson Card, because I don't think Casey Thompson's wrist/thumb is going to be up for it. And that was if you look at like Casey Thompson's numbers this year, half of his interceptions came in the last three games because he got injured against Oklahoma State. And so that is the thing that nobody's really talking about, is that I think he's hurt, and that's been the issue.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely never helps. You know, Kansas had its share of trying to play guys that were hurt and it not working out well for them. So yeah. I understand that entirely. You know, it does make me wonder, though, if, you know, Card has this well-known kind of issue with the way that he plays that's not really compatible with what the offensive line can give him. You know, what is the plan going to be for this week then? Because, you know, Kansas, while their defense has been giving up, you know, chunk plays quite a bit, you know, we saw them against Oklahoma that they took advantage of a really bad, you know, performance by Oklahoma's offensive line to really get a lot of pressure on Caleb Williams and really kind of cause a lot of issues there. You know, they have a guy on the defensive line in Kyron Johnson who is you know, probably a guy that could start at most teams in the Big 12, and unfortunately just doesn't have a lot to help him. You know, he is also a guy that was supposed to be the third best pass rushing option on this team before Kansas lost a couple guys to transfer. So, you know, he has stepped up pretty big, especially in the last few weeks here, and is the one guy in the front seven for Kansas that really is wreaking havoc. How does Texas handle that, and how worried are you about his ability to get into the backfield and disrupt what Hudson Card's trying to do?
Terrified. I'm absolutely terrified, because that's been the thing that has plagued Texas for the last four games. And again, if you even go back to the Arkansas game, that snowballed really quickly, and Sark should have pulled the quarterback quicker than he did. But like, that's the thing that's been air quotes keeping me up. It's actually not keeping me up. My 3 week old son is, but
fair.
There is, like, that's the thing. It's like, Texas is very likely, and Texas has gone base 12 personnel a lot this year, where they've got they're keeping multiple tight ends, and they're keeping running backs and max protect just out of necessity. And so I'm anticipating them keeping either Bijan. If there's one knock on Bijan's game, he has some room to grow as a pass blocker, and so I think we might see Roshan Johnson more in the game as a pass blocker. He's just the better of the two, and so I think Texas is going to have to devote multiple bodies to that in order to be able to play the offense that they want. And I mean, Hudson Card, if he's the quarterback, is a guy who can put some zip on the ball and put it in a spot. But he if he gets rattled, he's going to get rattled. And so I think they're going to scheme. They're going to hopefully scheme extra protection for him. And if he can get going early, you know, you look at the first play that they ran against OU that they took 75 yards for a touchdown. It wasn't anything other than a quick out to the fastest player on the team, Xavier Worthy. And then he made one guy miss and ran down the sideline. So I would hope to see Texas do some of that to loosen the defense, and then hopefully they can get things going elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, because Kansas, you know, for all the issues that they've had, they actually do have a pretty good defensive secondary. You know, Kenny Logan Jr., the safety kind of roaming in the middle, has made a ton of big plays throughout the last few weeks. He does have a habit of going a little low with his tackles. He needs to stop, you know, kind of leading with his helmet to try to tackle people. So like, if he doesn't make a whole bunch of plays in this game, I think it's probably because he gets himself ejected for targeting. That's happened way too often for him. But, you know, he's going to be back there making plays. Jacoby Bryant is a guy that, you know, at corner, you know, was expected to kind of be that second guy opposite of Caron Prunty, who was a freshman All-American last year before Prunty transferred. But he has stepped in, and you don't really hear a lot from Jacoby Bryant, because a lot of people aren't really throwing at him. You know, they've had a few plays that they've kind of sent his way, but he doesn't get a chance to really rack up stats because most people are avoiding his side of the field. So I'll be interested to kind of see where Texas is able to go. You know, in terms of wide receivers, you talked about Xavier Worthy, but who else does Texas have? Because I'm not super familiar. You know, I try to keep up with most of the conference, but I'm not super familiar with their wide receivers. And it seems to me it's because they don't really have anyone else that kind of jumps out at you. So who else in terms of this receiving core should Kansas fans be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, two of the three guys that started the season on the depth chart, Josh Moore entered in the portal. He got in a very public argument with Steve Sarkisian and transferred. And then Jordan Whittington is 3-for-3, 3 years, three injuries. And so he hurt his clavicle earlier in the season, and he's out. So you've got a guy named Marcus Washington who's going to be one of the starting wide receivers. And Washington is not going to be a speedy threat. He is a big physical, big – he's a typical Tom Herman wide receiver, where he's tall, physical, and honestly, I love Marcus Washington because he's also like a guy who is unafraid to block. And so I love a wide receiver that's like, I may not be able to outspeed you, but on a running play, I'm going to put you on your keister.
Right.
And so I love him. And then you're going to see Kelvonte Dixon, Moochie Dixon, as we call him, those who are familiar, is a guy who's stepping into the starting lineup for the first time. And he's a guy who's got all world talent, but he just hasn't been able to see the field a ton. And Sark has mentioned him several times as a guy who's made strides during the year. And so I'm curious to see what he does with his first start. He had a catch last week. He also had a drop last week. So 50-50 for him. But he's a guy who's going to have to step up, because if you're going to play next man up, then you're the next man up. And so those will be the three guys. Texas hasn't used their tight ends a ton. Sark doesn't necessarily throw a ton to the tight ends in this scheme. And Texas doesn't necessarily have a tight end that you'd want to throw to at this point. Jared Wiley has been significantly disappointing, and That's just the reality of the situation. So those are the three guys to look out for. I think Worthy is going to get touches early and often. He's like 130 yards away from breaking Roy Williams' freshman receiving record. So I don't think he breaks it against Kansas, but I think he puts himself in position to break it with one or two catches in 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, I was gonna say I would probably pencil him in for a good 80 yards at least against KU, because that's, I mean, Kansas is pretty good at shutting down guys for a good portion of the game, but they do give up some pretty big ones here and there. And it sounds to me like Xavier Worthy is probably the only real deep threat on this team, which does play into Kansas's, you know, favor a little bit, because they are really good about keeping stuff in front of them and coming up and making big hits. The biggest issue typically is just if a guy gets beat deep, especially with some of the young guys that they're working in that defensive secondary. So we'll have to see, you know, how well, and I think that'll probably kind of set the tone for the game, is how quickly can they get a deep one going to Worthy? Because if they can hit a couple of those in the first half, that really opens it up and really causes Kansas to be back on their heels to try to avoid those, which will open up the running game for Bijan. We'll keep Kansas from really bringing a bunch of pressure with the linebackers as well. So if Kansas can avoid the early, you know, first quarter bombs, I think that sets them up pretty well to keep this game fairly competitive. Obviously there is some interpretation for what defines competitive when you're playing Kansas versus Texas, but I guess we'll have to just kind of figure that out as we go. I do want to flip back real quick to the other side of the ball, because, you know, it's time to talk about matchups for this particular game. I think we've kind of covered the matchups fairly well when Texas is on offense, but when Texas is on defense, like, what is it about this Kansas defense or this Kansas offense that would potentially worry you, if Kansas were to be able to keep this game close?
I think this is a question I just talked about with my co-host. Like, I'm not sure who the quarterback is, but like, if Bean is healthy enough to go on Saturday, his ability to catch an edge is terrifying, and his ability to keep plays alive with his feet is something that really worries me, especially as Texas has shown itself susceptible to giving up stuff along the edges. You know, and that was what bit him against OU. And again, I'm not saying Jason Bean and Caleb Williams are in the same league at this point in their careers, but I am saying that an athletic quarterback who can make throws off schedule has plagued Texas. Happened against Bohannon, and Baylor did the same thing to them. So that's the thing that really worries me, is if Bean is playing, which I think it's still an if at this point. I haven't been the last
yeah it's
I saw
it's probably even... not likely, like the, okay. the last I heard, and this was earlier this afternoon, he was more towards doubtful than to questionable. So yeah. If we're thinking NFL injury designations, I would probably give him maybe a 25% chance of playing. I think the team is expecting that it's going to be Jalen Daniels. The question there, though, because, you know, the last time that these two teams played was down in Austin, and it was, you know, Jalen Daniels going toe-to-toe with Sam Ehlinger, you know, and, you know, losing on a last-second kick by Dicker, you know, in a absolutely wild game that went back and forth like crazy. So, like, how much worry is there? You know, this isn't a case where you're going to a backup quarterback who, you know, doesn't have a lot of experience and hasn't really been in that kind of environment. Like, this is a guy in Jalen Daniels who has played in this, you know, stadium. They have played against Texas and performed at a high level against Texas. Like, how worried are you that it is Jalen Daniels that's stepping into that role in his first game as a starter, kind of with that experience under his belt already?
I think the one thing that I'm concerned, I'm just concerned about Texas football overall.
Fair.
But I think the one thing that like eases my mind a little bit is that Puka Williams is not here to run for 200 yards. Like that's the thing that like gives me a little bit, takes a little bit of the pressure off of my chest. But no, I think it's still an absolutely, having a veteran quarterback, having a quarterback that's not necessarily afraid of, and nobody's afraid of Texas at this point, nor should they be, but a quarterback that's been able to find even limited success, confidence and swagger is a real thing when it comes to being able to play. You feel good, you play well. And right. So that's the thing that if he starts to feel it early, that's just the way football works. If KU hangs around and KU is able to put some points on the board and start to feel like we can win this thing, then they absolutely can win this thing. But if I mean, Puka Williams is a transcendent talent, and so him not being here this year, and his, I'm looking at the 190 and two, the guy averaged 7 a touch. Good Lord, I didn't realize it was that bad.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny you say that, because Kansas has a long line of really good running backs, and actually, Devin Neal, the running back that they have this year, is supposed to be a much more well-rounded back, can do a lot of things, he isn't quite as fast as Puka Williams was, but is definitely, I think, a much better back overall than Puka Williams was, because Williams's main, you know, asset was his speed, getting out to the edge. Devin Neal has shown the ability to get out to the edge somewhat, but also the ability to kind of cut inside, you know, kind of do more as the season has gone on, and he's really kind of come into his own. The problem has always been that Kansas is so far behind that they have to start throwing the ball, and so he doesn't get to do quite as much. So I do think that there is a big opportunity for a guy like Devin Neal, especially, you know, as you were talking about, like, cutbacks being a real big problem for this Texas defense. That's like Devin Neal's game. Like, that's what he does quite a bit. And so I do think there's an opportunity, unfortunately, for Texas fans that, you know, you might kind of have that, you know, PTSD about Puka Williams running all over you. I think that Devin Neal has an opportunity to really break out in this game against Texas as well, because his skill set is set up perfectly for what you were describing in terms of the, you know, problems that this defense has. As long as Kansas can get a few passes to guys like Kwame Lassiter or Luke Grimm to keep the defense honest, I think you're going to see that Kansas is going to find a lot of success in this game. The question is just always going to be, can the defense stop Texas enough to actually make it matter?
And I think the Texas offense has shown that they are infinitely fallible. Not infallible, but infinitely fallible.
Right.
So
right.
That is...
well, that's all right. The Kansas offense is also the same way, so... I would say that the Kansas offense can either be really, really good and super surprise you, and that's what happened against Oklahoma for quite a long time, or they can look absolutely atrocious like they did against Oklahoma State. Now, granted, I think Oklahoma State probably has one of the best defenses in the nation, so I'm not necessarily that surprised. But, you know, it is definitely one of those things where if it starts going bad for Kansas, it gets really bad. If it starts going good, they can shock some people.
And it wouldn't be the first time that Kansas shocked Texas.
I know.
It's happened multiple times in recent memory. The 2019 game was, well, and that was shocking, and Texas narrowly avoided that embarrassment
twice. Was lucky to escape, yeah.
Yeah, but absolutely. No, very lucky to escape. And so, yeah, I think it is the 30-point line feels really, really aggressive. I would take Kansas if you're a betting person. 30 points is massive, regardless of who you're playing.
Yeah,
like, and I just don't. Like, I don't.
Kansas.
It might be three scores, but 30. Good Lord.
Yeah, Kansas. The only time Kansas has actually won against the spread was against Oklahoma, and that was a game that nobody saw coming. It's been weird because it always seems like these spreads are like just out of reach, and they barely lose to them, but. Like you said, I have a hard time, like, unless everything just completely falls apart and Texas all of a sudden figures it out, you know, and just goes on a huge tear from here. Like, I just, these games have always been weird. Kansas, for the most part, has played really well against Texas, you know, with the exception of, like, I believe it was David Beatty's first year. And then, like, the year after that, the year after Beatty beat Texas, and Texas decided to take all that anger out on them with the brand new coach that they had in Tom Herman. So, like, you know, Texas definitely had a few moments, but for the most part, Kansas has played that game a lot closer than they really have any business playing when you look at the talent disparity between the two teams. So I just, you're right. That 30.5 is a giant number to me. I don't know how Texas covers it, especially, you know, the issues that Texas have had in the second half where they don't, you know, they don't keep up that defensive pressure in the second half. They have problems. Things start to slip. Like, I could envision a scenario where Texas is up by 4 scores, you know, early in the third quarter, and then they let it slip back, you know, and Kansas ends up being within 10 or something like that. So, I'm not really sure what I think is going to happen in this game. I just know that 30.5 seems like a gigantic number, that there's absolutely no way that Texas is going to cover it.
I could see it looking similar to the Tech game, and that was, I think, Texas won by 35 points. I don't know and have any confidence that Texas will do this, but Texas had a huge first half and got some stops defensively. And then they basically just had a track meet in the second half where Texas would go 3 plays and a score, and then Tech would go 3 plays and a score. And so, like, that could very well be the second half of this game. And so the question is, like, can Texas build up a big enough lead early? That's the thing that I'm watching. Is Sark has been a master of his early game scripts. Especially that's what worked against OU. That's what worked against Oklahoma State. That's what really worked to a lesser extent against Baylor. And so like if the scheme coming out of the locker room in the first half is good enough, Texas can build up a big lead. They've shown that. But again, like you mentioned, can that hold up on both sides of the ball? And I don't know that.
I mean, and that's the thing is like, it's hard to tell if this is, you know, teams making adjustments or if it's Texas getting comfortable because they have a big lead and think that there's no way that, you know, the opponent's going to come all the way back. Like, I just don't know what it is. It's something weird with this team. I guess we'll find out for sure just how big of a problem it is with this particular game that's coming up. So, you know, like if there's ever a time to be able to hold on to a big lead in the second half, it's against a team like Kansas that has shown that they have all the problems that they do. So, all right. Gerald, just one last final question for you before we touch briefly on basketball for this game. Do you actually have a prediction for this game that you want to give us?
Oh man, I suck at predictions. Everybody always asks me.
Oh, I know.
I feel like at some point I should too. Get better at it. I think Texas wins. I think it's probably maybe an 8. My gut says like 17-21 maybe is potential. If it is a blowout, I think I don't know how those wizards in the desert do it, but they seem to know how things are going to go more often than not. So I just think 31 points is huge. That is an entire football game. But I do think it's 17 points feels okay to me. And I think, Texas fans feel all right about that.
Yeah, no, at first I thought you were saying it was going to be a 21-17 game, and I was like, man, you really are down on your Texas team. So, I do think that Kansas is going to have a great opportunity to get some success here. I think really just the question is going to be how well they can do it early, because I think that more than any other game, this is the game where it's going to matter for them to get off to a fast start. You know, if Texas gets up by four or five scores, you know, right after halftime, then it's going to be tough for this team to kind of stay in it, especially down in Austin. But the more, you know, this is definitely a highly charged game though. Like this is the one that a lot of Kansas players, you know, when I talked with them or kind of heard about the ones that they had circled, this was one of the ones. Not only because, you know, Texas is obviously leaving for the SEC, but also just because of the history between these two schools, the fact like a lot of Kansas fans and a lot of Kansas players think that, you know, this particular game for whatever reason, you know, the refs are against them more than they usually are. And so like, this is one that is like super highly charged. If they can even keep this, I think within two or three scores going into halftime, they're going to feel good about that position and the opportunity just with how often Texas had issues in the second half defensively. You know, they'll feel like they have a good opportunity to be able to stay in the game and keep it close and potentially try to pull an upset, you know, and like you said, or like we were talking about the last time they played down in Austin, this was a game where, you know, Texas jumped out to a pretty big lead early. Kansas came all the way back and almost won that game. So like there is precedent for it. There's a lot of players that are still on this team that remember that game, that are able to kind of talk about that game and what they were able to experience there. So I do think that there's an opportunity here for Kansas. I do agree. I think that we're probably looking at somewhere between a 17-24 point win for Texas at the very end of it. But I wouldn't be shocked if this is a game that we're all sitting there, you know, late in the fourth quarter. It's like, what is going on? Why has Texas not put this one away yet? Yep. Ultimately, I think they will. Like, as much as I want to say that I think Kansas can win this game and it would be absolutely phenomenal if they did, it's really hard for me to actually pick it. Now we'll see if my mind changes between now and when I actually put my prediction over on Rock Chalk Talk, but I guess we'll just have to find out there. So, all right, Gerald, one last thing before we get out of here, or actually, I'm sorry, before that, this is the one thing though, you know, Kansas football has had some hard times. It's really hard to stick with it sometimes, but there is one thing that's always great about the football experience, and that is tailgating. And tailgating, no tailgate is complete without a custom grill grate or all the great stuff that you can get over at Gridiron Metalworks. Gridiron Metalworks is where you can get high quality metal home goods for the college super fan in your life. Whether that's you or someone else, find collegiate branded grill grates, griddles, or any number of home decor items, including flower pots, stainless steel bookends, coasters, or can coolers. All of these are in actual school colors, not just the, oh, it's really close colors that other manufacturers like to use. You know, I have one of the desk plaques. It's a big Jayhawk head with the word Kansas next to it. Absolutely love that thing. It's up on one of my bookshelves. I have the bookend as well, which is fantastic. And I do have a sign that I had them custom make for me that is my podcast logo that everybody talks about whenever they walk into my house. So it's absolutely fantastic stuff they have. Everything that they make there is high quality, made in the USA, and they continue to add new products all the time. If you use promo code CHALK12, you can get 15% off your entire first order. And right now, everything that you order gets free shipping, no matter how much it is. They are gearing up for the holidays, so if you do want to order something, I guarantee you're going to find a gift that, you know, someone on your list does not have. But head on over there, order early to make sure that they can actually fill it and get it to you by Christmas. Use that promo code CHALK12 and get 15% off of everything that you get see over there. All right, Gerald, final question. We're going to wrap up with the greatest time of the year is basketball season. You know, I think that we can both agree on that right now, because both of our teams are supposed to be absolutely fantastic this year. But just how excited are you for this, and how tough do you think the Big 12 conference season is going to be this year?
I am extremely excited. And I, when they hired Chris Beard, I didn't know what the team was going to be, because I think there was one player that was currently on the roster, and that's Brock Cunningham, who in the opener had 0 points and 5 fouls. So I didn't necessarily know what it was going to be, but the Chris Beard fully transforming into the portal pirate and rebuilding this roster from, you know, two guys that were on the squad last year and then basically all transfers, three guys that were on the roster. I keep forgetting about Brock because Brock still exists, but it's been, I mean, when you fill your roster with all conference transfers, like they were all conference in the conference they're coming from, it's hard not to be excited. And I think we saw a lot of proof of concept. We still don't know what the rotation is going to be, because I think that Texas had like 6 or 7 players that played like 14 minutes last night. So that's obviously not going to be the rotation. But I think as someone who loved Shaka as a person, but was very frustrated with the on-court performances, I think it's good to see this. It's good to see what Chris Beard is doing. Texas had a, I think the fourth highest attendance for an opener in school history. They sold a record number of season tickets, and it's the last year of the Irwin Center. So getting people into that massive arena has always been an issue. And so I'm excited. Fans are excited. It's hard not to be excited about this new chapter. And the Big 12, I've said it before, and I'll say it again, the Big 12, forget the Big 10, forget any other conference. The Big 12 is consistently, and even after, and probably even more so after the changes, is the best basketball conference in the country, hands down. Like, you can argue with your mama about
it. Oh, yeah,
for
sure.
The Big 12, even the not good teams in the Big 12 can jump up a bite you the keister. And that, to me, is the sign of a good conference. And I just love it sucks to watch those games because it's nerve-wracking, and there's very few that you get to just enjoy. But it's just so much fun. There's no two ways around it.
Right, right. If you're going to watch a Big 12 game, it better be like, if you want to enjoy the experience, it better be because you just want to watch good basketball, not because you're expecting your team to go blow out the other team, because that's hardly ever going to happen. When it does happen, it's super surprising. Even against teams like Iowa State or Kansas State last year, like, you know, there was really, really difficult games there, or TCU. Like, there are difficult games against the bottom of this conference because there really isn't a bad team at all in the conference, except for, with the exception of Iowa State last year. That was a bad team, but, you know, that was kind of understandable given all the roster issues that they had. But, you know, this year, it was a fantastic opening 2 days for the Big 12. They went 7-0 on opening night, including a Kansas win over Michigan State in the Champions Classic, a 13-point win, which is actually, I mean, a lot higher than I expected. And of course, Texas, you know, just completely blowing Houston Baptist out of the water with a 92-48 win. Like, there are a lot of loaded teams. You know, Baylor is going to be absolutely a beast this year as well. I wouldn't be surprised to see like Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, even though Oklahoma State's not eligible for the postseason now because of that ridiculous NCAA opinion. You know, they are going to wreak some havoc, I think, in the Big 12 this year as well. So it's going to be absolutely fantastic. They are 8-0 as a conference so far this year, because Kansas State beat Florida A&M by 10 this evening when we're recording. By the time this one comes out, TCU will probably either already have played or be getting ready to play. So, you know, we'll see how good of an opening weekend this can be. You know, Texas has a big game coming up this weekend too against Gonzaga. So, you know, that'll be a good opportunity, I think, for the conference to get a big win, just because I don't know that Gonzaga is quite as good as a lot of people seem to think that they're going to be. So we'll have to see how all of that plays out. But Gerald, thank you for joining me tonight. Where can everybody find your work online?
You can follow me on Twitter for my, if you're looking for Texas Longhorn stuff, which I'm not sure why you would, but at Longhorn Pod is where I do all of that. My personal Twitter is at GH Goodridge. Most of that is like movie nonsense and then dumb stuff my kids do because my kids are hilarious. I think everybody thinks their kids are hilarious.
Of course they are.
My kids are weird because they're my little ADHD spawn. So I tweet a lot about my kids over at GH Goodridge on Twitter.
Yeah, you know what? As long as Texas is part of the Big 12, I will still tell people that they need to know what's going on and follow all the good podcasts and all the good covers that they do have there. So I definitely recommend going out there and following Gerald over at the Longhorn Republic and him personally as well, if you aren't already. And I mean, we are part of a 10-12 network that covers all the teams in the Big 12 Conference, including we do have a Texas pod, and we are currently looking at whether we're going to get an Oklahoma one on here as well or not. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great coverage over there. So definitely go over there, follow you guys, follow everybody that we have over on the network, keep up to date with all of the Big 12 teams. But that is going to do it for us today. Gerald, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Podcast. You can subscribe to the show and get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you can give me a rating and a review, would love 5 stars and nice comments. But whatever you are able to give me, I'm looking to try to get a bunch of reviews before the end of the year. If you do leave me a review, I will read it on the show. I actually did see that there was another one that actually had come in earlier this week that I wasn't able to pull before the show tonight. So, but I promise I'll get that one on the next one next week, along with any other ones that people leave between now and then. So definitely go out and do that. But for whatever reason, if you're not able to give us those 5 stars, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys to get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, you can contact me at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. We do actually have a really great interview coming up over the weekend that we'll be posting sometime next week. I'm not going to spoil who it is, but I can guarantee you, if you are a Kansas football fan, you are going to want to hear this one. So make sure that you get subscribed so you can hear that as soon as it comes out. You can follow all the great shows on the 1012 Network. Just go to TEN12 Network over on Twitter to find links to all the great shows. Because we're on the Anchor platform, you can actually leave us a voicemail, get your voice on the show. Just go to anchor.fm/rock-chalk-podcast/message, and I promise that we'll get it on there. But that's going to do it for us tonight. Thank you guys so much for listening. Gerald, thank you for joining me. Make sure you guys go out to the sponsors, use promo code CHALK12 at Gridiron Metal and Symbol to get some great deals over there. But that'll do it for us tonight. Thank you guys. Have a good night, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Welcome to Between Two Bears, the newest 1012 Network podcast. This is Matt Isbear. I'm going to introduce my co-host, Evan Abear, to give you a quick idea of what the show is about.
Yeah, Between Two Bears is going to be Between Two Bears is going to be a great look at the silly and sometimes stupid... Between Two Bears is going to be a great look at the silly and sometimes stupid side of Baylor sports... Hey, I'm going to try one more time. Between Two
Bears. Okay. Evan's going to go take a nap. But we are excited to join the 1012 Network along with the rest of their already great lineup of Big 12 podcasts. Check them out at 1012 Network on Twitter and us as well at Matt Is Bear and at Evan Hebear. Sick 'em Bears.
This is Brandon Phoenix, a.k.a. I Also Hate Pitt, joined by my brother, Jeremy J.N. Fiend Phoenix. We are the Raspy Voice Kids. We do the Raspy Voice Kids podcast. If you love West Virginia University, you will love our podcast. If you don't care about West Virginia University, you will love our pop culture segment. It begins every single episode. You can join in the fun anytime, any place. Get at your boys.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.